In the studio with me, Bill Bryant. Bill, welcome back to the Todd Herman Show.
Hey, Todd. Thanks for having me here.
Pleasure. You had an interesting conversation with our lieutenant governor, and we'll get to the questions here piling up for you, 800-465-8770, and on Twitter, at Toddy Herman. Cyrus Habib said basically that he observes white nationalism taking over the GOP here. Cyrus used to respond to me on Twitter, used to come on the show, but now there's a rule, Democrats can't come on the show. And I sent Cyrus a note saying, name the names. I want the names. I want them out of the
party. That's a good thing to ask him. I didn't ask him. That's a good thing. Yeah. Who are they? Who are these people?
Yeah. I haven't seen any response to that. Did he name any names with you?
No. I tweeted in response saying, hey, I'm running all over the state helping legislative candidates and candidates for city and council races. And I'm not seeing any white nationalists. So who are you talking about? And rather than putting out there as lieutenant governor a lot of divisive hyperbolic rhetoric, why don't we just focus on the issues in Washington State? We can identify where we disagree and have alternative pathways forward, but let's keep this focused on issues. And he responded, you know, saying that I'd misunderstood and the party really is run amok with all these white nationalists. I'm like, I'm not seeing it. And frankly, the day that I was up in Everett, or the day that this came out, I was up in Everett, and I was working with Savio Pham, a Vietnamese immigrant who's running for the state Senate, the body over which the lieutenant governor presides, and he's exactly the kind of person we need to have elected. And I didn't see a whole lot of white nationalists in that rally for Savio Pham.
No, and this is a scare tactic, and it's a disgusting one. But the fact is, Bill, it's worked. It worked in Burien, Washington.
Well, I think they're sitting there, and they're watching too much of the national media, whatever cable station it is, and they're swallowing this line where it is not the reality in Washington State.
Yeah, but it's working. It worked in this. They're using this as a blueprint. They used it in Burien to elect a bunch of people who have no business being on a city council. None of them are governors. They're all agitators. So I think they're seeing it bear fruit. But there's something I don't think they're aware of. There's a book Dr. Carol Swain wrote a book called The New White Supremacist. Or new white supremacy. She's an African-American academic who points to the fact that talk like that is actually creating, in some circles in the country, it's actually creating more of this, right?
Well, it's definitely pulling us apart.
Well, yeah.
And frankly, you'd think if you're the lieutenant governor, who's supposed to be somewhat of a bipartisan or nonpartisan figure over the state Senate, you would think that that's the kind of person who would step forward and try and pull people together. His predecessors have done that. But he's not behaving in the way that a lieutenant governor is traditionally behaving.
Well, no, he intends to run for governor one day as well.
Has he told Bob that?
Sideshow Bob, our part-time attorney general. Well, speaking of Sideshow Bob, question number one for Bill Bryant. Tim in Bellevue, what can we do to eliminate tolls in Washington State?
Well, I don't know if you're going to eliminate them, but we need to certainly make sure that we're governing them in such a way that they can't be raised at will, and that the people's voice has no input into the decisions on tolling. If we tried to simply pay for everything with the gas tax, there's not enough money. You would jack it up. So I understand why in certain cases, for certain stretches, in limited situations, we might have to have some tolling. But I'll tell you, man, just to turn that over to bureaucrats and let them decide what the rate's going to be, that's not a solution.
Well, you know Mark Harmsworth.
Oh, very well.
So Harmsworth has done a brilliant job of exposing what WashDOT and the Transportation Commission want to do. Bill, they want to toll our very lives. They want our lives to be tolled. They want they're in fact talking now about not even forcing a GPS unit down our throats. There's now the electric license plates, or I should say connected license plates, where they intend to ratchet up the tolls on every single road in this area.
Well, and let me be clear what we're talking about. We're talking about tolls.
Yeah.
When I was saying they might be needed in certain stretches and certain circumstances, I'm talking about paying for a particular piece of construction, right?
Right.
A lot of the tolls they're talking about are to manage our lives and to control our behavior. And that's a very different subject than, hey, we need to build a new bridge and we're going to have to toll it until we can pay for it.
Yeah, they want to cause us economic pain until we stop driving.
It's social engineering in too many cases.
Right. Now, look, why is there no bill from the Republican side saying no?
Well, Harmsworth has been pushing back and he has introduced bills. What we need is a Republican majority in the House so they get a fair hearing and get to the floor.
Look, there are Democrats, Bill, who live in rural areas. It will kill farmers. It will kill people who live in rural areas. I know there's few Democrats.
Talk to people
in rural
who live
areas.
In Sultan and Gold Bar and commute down into Snohomish County or even into Seattle, and they're having to, or Bellevue, and they're having to deal with a lot of these tolls, which again have as much to do with social engineering as they do paying for that stretch of 405.
And
you're like you're talking about up in Snohomish County and on the. On what do you call it? The trestle.
Yeah. That'll kill you. Yeah. So, but if you communicate this as Washington State drivers will not be tracked. How do you not sell that to the left? You want the government tracking you? Don't talk about it in terms of revenue. Don't talk about it in terms of tolling. Washington State will not directly or indirectly monitor at any time the movement of Washington State citizens or anyone in Washington State without a criminal warrant for discovery.
There you go.
If you did that as an initiative, right? But it should be done as a legislative move and make Democrats say, no, actually, we want the right. We want to be able to monitor everywhere.
As long as you've got a Democrat majority in the State House of Representatives, that vote won't get to the floor because they don't want their members having to take that vote.
Yes, that's true.
So it will get stuck in committee, and that's probably where it's been whenever people like Mark have stepped up and offered some solutions.
Yeah, well, he fought the Sound Transit battle. He's been an amazing guy in that. Okay,
and the 405, I worked with him on moving the 405 tolls off that lane as well.
Twitter, at Toddy Herman, Chris Hanks. How do we restore discipline and respect in public schools if we were reinventing Washington State education? My wife lives in fear as a teacher.
Wow. That's my buddy Chris from Packwood or Randall, I think. I know him from Facebook.
Okay.
I mean, I've been talking about how we need to reinvent high school so that it meets the needs of kids in the 21st century, and particularly kids who don't want to go on to a four-year institution. And we've got to do that. We've got this post-World War II education system that is not meeting the needs of kids. But I'll tell you, if kids are in fear of themselves, they're not going to be able to learn. So we've got to figure out how we can provide kids with a very safe learning environment.
Well, there's teachers, and I've talked to them, Bill, that they can't kick people who are acting thuggishly out of their classroom.
No, that's what I mean. You have to have discipline in the school so that teachers feel they're in control of their classroom and they can remove students who are being abusive or interfering with the learning experience of other kids.
Yep.
But then we just don't stick them out in the hallway. We have to recognize that's a potential problem and get those kids some counseling or attention so that we can prevent a major problem in the future.
On the text line, 800-465-8770, last time you were on Todd's show, you talked about Western State Hospital. Has anything happened there? Will anyone ever be held to account?
I don't know if anything's happened. If it is, I've missed it. The Seattle Times deserves a shout-out because they took the governor to task, saying that when I was bringing this up in the campaign, he was saying, oh, nothing to see here. I got this under control. And nothing has happened. And now the feds have moved in and taken away the certification of Western State Hospital and its accreditation as well. And we have tens of millions of dollars at stake and the lives of hundreds and hundreds of people around Washington. And when is he going to be held accountable for that? I mean, this is incredible that this has happened entirely on his watch. He cannot blame the legislature. This is on him. The Western State Hospital, under his administration, failed a federal audit. He did nothing. 4 months later, it failed a second audit. He did nothing. 3 months later, it failed a third federal audit, and he did nothing. After failing four, he only came to life because, as you remember, that was the month that two very dangerous patients escaped and actually ended up being caught in Pierce County and Spokane County.
Yep.
That's when he came to life because he knew it was on the front page of the paper. He had to do something.
Gave a speech.
So he gave a speech. And he said he fired the CEO, who then we found out still continued to work for DHHS for a few months.
Yeah, double dipping.
Look, there is no record of accomplishment. There is only a record of failure on the part of the governor. It is putting communities in jeopardy. It's hurting people's lives. It's costing us tens of millions of dollars. And where is the outrage?
Exactly, and particularly from people who want to be the party of government. Okay, we said five questions.
What's that, two?
What are the odds of Mr. Bryant running for governor again?
I don't know. You want the honest answer? I don't know.
You don't know?
No, I honestly,
50,
I mean,
I'm
not going to put odds on. I've actually promised myself I'm not even going to start thinking about this until, sometime next year. Right now, I am working with this new political action committee I put together to help get people at the city and county level elected. I'm very excited about a lot of the candidates we are working with for this year and particularly for 2019. And that's where I'm putting my political emphasis right now. And that's not a politician's answer. That's actually got the added advantage of being the truth.
So I'll let you know when Bill said, I don't know, he actually looked befuddled. I don't know. So that's my honest answer. Okay, a bunch of other questions came piling in. We'll have to save them for next time. In fact, if your question came in today and it didn't get read, I'm going to start a Bill Bryant file, and your question will be up first. So we'll do that next time. Bill, thanks for coming on.
I will come in whenever you want.
You forgot to mention how people get in touch with you if they want to help get good candidates elected.
Go to forgewa.org, F-O-R-G-E-W-A, forgewa.org.
All right. Thanks, Bill. Appreciate you coming in.
Hey, anytime. Thank you, Todd. Yep.
Todd Emmer Show will continue on AM 770 KTTH. So remember the Janus ruling where you can't be forced to join a government labor union anymore? The Democrats have a plan for that. There's an app for that. Guess whose money they're going to come after now? Thanks for listening to the Todd Emmer Show. The text line's open, 800-465-8770. We'll get to your emails just around the corner, about 4:45. And then a hard truth on kids being separated from their parents. The local media had a heyday with one singular message about one singular family. But the local media failed to mention something very, very important about 600 kids and who they came in the country with. Extremely important. And it's also a reason why we wanted to detain these folks. So you remember the Janus ruling. The Janus ruling was a Supreme Court ruling. It was Janus versus the AFSCME. This is the ruling from the Supreme Court, which is an extraordinarily radical ruling. Here's the radicalism of this Supreme Court. You cannot be forced to give money to a third party because you want to work for the government. You cannot be forced to give money to a third party you disagree with because you want to work for the government. A third party cannot take money out of your pocket because you want to work for your government. Isn't that radical? You can't be forced to give money to an entity that disagrees with you politically, unless, of course, you live in Seattle, in which case you can, because it's not a union thing. This affected only public employee unions. On the good news side, in California, they are seeking the people who've been forced to turn over bribe money to the SEIU. They're going after 12 years, 12 years of back dues that could just cripple the SEIU, and they're the worst of the unions. So, stepping up, because not all heroes wear capes, is a guy, a Democrat from Manhattan. I was joking when I said hero. Richard Gottfried. He has himself a plan to get around this whole Janus nonsense. Here's how they got around it in Washington State. And I predict this is going to happen more. In Washington State, Sleepy Jay Inslee worked with, surprise, 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 the SEIU, where the former chairperson, Luke Esser, of the Washington State Republican Party works. That's a little note on what has gone on in our party here. Luke Esser, former chair of the Republicans, works for the SEIU. The SEIU, according to the Freedom Foundation, wrote a piece of legislation which allowed Inslee to get around the Janus ruling. That is where they took home health care workers, people earning barely enough to survive, taking care of sick loved ones in their homes. Hey, you no longer work for Medicaid or the state of Washington. Now you work for a private company. They're unionized. There you go. That's one workaround. In the state of New York, it's worse. In the state of New York, Richard Gottfried has a plan that would allow the unions to get their operating funds from someone else, since they could no longer force the people who want to work in the public schools or for the Port Association, etc., all the government offices, can no longer be forced to join. Now, guess where they're going to get those monies? You already got it, the taxpayer. This guy's bill will allow the unions to put their operating costs into their contract with the government. So even if there were zero employees being represented, the union would still be getting money. It's not tied to the employees anymore. It's simply the taxpayer giving money to the unions, even if there's no union employees. This is how addicted these people are to being able to force you to fund their street soldiers. Now, locally, speaking of unions, did you hear about this guy, Albert Verasmith? Verakasmith? Seattle Times, Lewis Cam. This is a guy who was working in the schools. Shows up drunk a couple of times, blows a .04 one of the times, missed work 21 times, was given unsatisfactory ratings on all of his performance, as I understand it from this piece. There were people who reviewed him said, this guy can't work here. He was given the lowest possible reviews. He has now been charged with rape. And why was he there? The Seattle Education Association, that union kept him there. The number of times this guy was in trouble are extraordinary. Last school year, five of his violations came to light. And nothing happened until January 29th when a 9-year-old told his parents that five to six times this guy had allegedly sexually assaulted him inside a bathroom. So he comes to work drunk. So he is known to yell at kids. He gets the lowest possible performance reviews. He was given disciplinary action three or four times. He was stepped up a process, given warning after warning. And he shows up to school drunk after having made an excuse. He was late for work one day or didn't show up. And he called the principal and said, I got arrested. And then was allowed to go to work the next day. And then he said, oh, yeah, I made that up. I wasn't really arrested. You were paying this guy 30 grand to go do this stuff. He was allowed to switch schools to go be a substitute teacher at schools. He missed 13 of 65 scheduled days of school in 2016. When he did substitute teach, he was found asleep in the classroom, coloring like in a color book in the back of the classroom. It took them, as I'm reading this, at least a year to a year and a half to get this guy fired, but not soon enough to protect a 9-year-old from being raped. But the unions want to be able to force you now to underwrite their expenses. What's Jay Inslee's concern with all of this going on in the schools?
Now, I know that you have suggested arming our teachers. And
no,
I just...
No,
I
no,
just,
not your teachers.
Not your
arming
teachers.
A small portion that are very gun adept, that truly know how to handle. Because so I do feel, Governor, it's very important that gun-free zones, you have a gun-free zone, it's like an invitation for these very sick people to go there. I do think that there has to be some form of major retaliation if they're able to enter a school. And if that happens, you're not going to have any problems anymore because they're never going to the school. You're never going to have a problem. So it would just be a very small group of people that are very gun adept. Anyway, go ahead, Governor.
If I may respond to that, let me just suggest whatever percentage it is. I heard at one time you might have suggested 20%. Whatever percentage it is, speaking as a grandfather,
right,
speaking as a governor of the state of Washington, I have listened to the people who would be affected by that. I've listened to the biology teachers, and they don't want to do that at any percentage.
And guess what, Jay? They don't have to. Because nothing in the president's plan said they had to. That's your concern, but the unions are keeping rapists in their jobs, Jay. Unbelievable. We'll come back on the Todd Herman Show at AM 770 KTTH. A local story went national this weekend, but all with one tune. Was about the woman, no doubt, absolutely thrilled beyond belief to see her little one. Heartwarming, and you'd be dead if it wasn't heartwarming if you saw them reunited. But the media took one tone and one tone only, and only one media source here used a particular word to describe this woman's actions. That plus, what is the disposition of 600 kids the media doesn't want to talk about who came into our country? With whom did they come into our country? The Department of Homeland Security would like you to know that. my gosh! I have never seen such derangement in my life. This is a tweet that just came out from Ian Millhiser. He is followed by 57,000 people on Twitter. He's the justice editor for Think Progress. I kid you not, this is his headline to his piece. The Supreme Court is about to usher in a voting rights apocalypse. We're going to miss competitive elections when they're gone. And his tweet, if Kavanaugh is confirmed, you can kiss the right to vote. Goodbye. And you expect us to now panic on command about what happened in Helsinki? When you are telling your beloved but absolutely empty-headed followers that an election of Judge Kavanaugh, who has no radicalism, none in his background, will end the right to vote? Oh, I know, I'm supposed to click on it.
You haven't read the article. You said the tweet just came out. You're just as bad as a low-information voter. You didn't even click.
I'm not clicking on that sort of clickbait. There can be no substance to an article that begins that way worth reading. There can't be. All right, I want to give you three headlines from over the weekend when I was prepping the show. These are three local media sources. And I'm sorry that today has turned into pick on the media day, but they make it impossible to do otherwise today. This stuff arises organically. It's not like I sit down and go, you know what, Monday, I just really want to go after the media. That's not how it happens. I do my show prep like I always do my show prep. And I was just reading local news. I always start local because that's, you know, you want your country back, take back your states. Want your state back, take back your counties, take back your cities. It works that way. Q13. But this has to be coordinated. This is either AP rules, style book, or a decision amongst media people to treat this one way. Q13. Mom reunited with son after being separated by immigration officials. So you get the really heartwarming video, and it is. It's completely heartwarming. It's absolutely made me smile, feel warm inside. This is the mom rushing over. She's getting to greet her little boy. She hasn't held her little boy in 2 months. It's absolutely heartwarming. No, it puts a tear in my eye. You know, I've had times where my little girl's been, you know, away at camp. It's terribly difficult. And I knew I would get my daughter back. This lady didn't know that. I get that. It's absolutely heartwarming. But again, the headline, mom reunited with son after being separated by immigration officials. You read the entire piece. There's a word that doesn't appear. Not doesn't appear once. King 5. Migrant mother and son reunite at SeaTac Airport. And this is King 5's Michael Krause speaking with Yolani Padilla. She was just reunited with her little boy. Of course she's thrilled.
The pace of an airport is a blur. But when Yolani Padilla saw her son again, her world stopped.
I mean, she said it was like my heart was going to come out of my body.
She spoke to reporters through an interpreter.
It's difficult to explain in this moment because it's so big. It's been so long since I've seen him. Imagine how I feel inside.
No, I get it. I'd imagine, right? Ever since you snuck across the board. Oh, wait. Did I give it away? You read the entire King 5 piece. You watch the entire King 5 piece. Not a single use of a single word that sort of puts some context to this. The media. Who, what, where, when, why. Who are we talking about? We're talking about Yolani Padilla. Where? SeaTac Airport. Why? Because she's being reunited with her son. How did the story begin? Where did it begin? On the U.S. border. Because all of these stories, all of the headlines are acting like she was just separated from her kid. Como News. Immigrant mother reunited with 6-year-old son in SeaTac after nearly 2 months apart. So we've got the word migrant, we've got the word immigrant, we've got the word mom, we've got the Q13 being most active in their description of mom, you're reunited with son after being separated by immigration officials. We've got all of that. Only Cairo 7. And in 4 or 5 paragraphs down from the beginning of the story, only Cairo 7 makes note of the fact that the lady came into the country illegally seeking asylum. which is what kicks off the whole thing. So if you are a consumer of Q13, King 5, Como News, and the national media, you read this and you go, at last, they're finally reuniting this mother with her son, and all she did was she came here seeking asylum. That's it. You don't know she came here illegally. You don't know that the federal law is the kids had to be in separate detention facilities if you're going to detain the adult. Now, why would you detain the adult? A, because the president's right. When he started this detention, guess what? People stopped bringing their kids in because they said, oh, that doesn't work anymore. What doesn't work anymore? The game that the traffickers are playing. They're saying, if you want to stay in the United States, take a kid. They won't detain you. They won't kick you back if you got a kid. You get to stay. That woman, by the way, is apparently suing us. She came here, broke into our country, and she's claiming asylum. That's her right. We give the right people to do that, but she came here illegally to do that. That's not her right. She's suing us. That's not in these stories. This was the human interest angle. The border control is seeing an uptick in the number of people coming into the country to take advantage of the Flores Agreement. I just mentioned this. This is the federal law that says kids can't be held in the same detention facilities as adults. I think Jeff Sessions has found a way to waive that. That they're finding an uptick in the number of people coming across the border with kids who do not belong to them. So, again, if we're to listen to the left, when an adult shows up with a kid, you say, ah, well, you asking for asylum? Yes. They have a card from the ACLU or other open border zealots. They read the card in Spanish to an immigration officer they know speaks Spanish. They use the magic words, I fear for my life and my country. There's political violence. I seek asylum in the United States of America with me and my children. They take that, and now what does the left say? Let them go. All right. How about 600 kids? 600 kids who've come across our border in fiscal year 2018, 600 kids who aren't with their parents, 600 kids who are being used, according to Border Patrol officers and Border Patrol officials, such as Deputy Chief Patrol Agent Raul Ortiz, clearly a white supremacist, Mr. Ortiz, Raul, clearly a Nazi, white supremacist. Says 600 times since fiscal year 2018, they've found people coming across the border to use kids, as he describes, as get out of jail free cards. He describes them as commodities brought across the border because they know about the Flores Agreement. And they know that the press beat the heck out of the president, and the left did, until the president has gone back to basically catch and release. That's the game. None of that is mentioned in any of the local stories that were all about an immigrant mother reunited with her kids who the immigration people hid from her for a couple of months. There you go, media. Once again, you want to be able to be listened to, then be respectful, because right now you are not being that. And here we are to your emails and social media posts, longer forms of communication with the show. We do text messages throughout the show. You can text us at 800-465-8770. That's brought to you by None Better Tax Resolution. The email front, therman@ktth.com, or Facebook private note. That's facebook.com/Todd Herman Show. Start things off with Mark in Redmond. Todd, I've been on the Trump train since day one. I'm scratching my head today. I didn't expect to always be happy with things that President Trump did. I am someone, however, who likes his personality. I watched the entire press conference today, and I'm truly baffled. I saw a man who was afraid to take a solid position. That has never been the Trump way. I don't know what to think about this. I don't know if he was having an off day. I do think that perhaps part of his reticence is that he knows the media is absolutely set upon making him the Putin boy. So I wonder to what degree that was on his mind as he stood there sort of defensively playing defense. I would say this. The summit, if we're calling it that, was ill-conceived. I don't see any goals for it. I don't understand why it occurred. And I wonder if this isn't a little bit of the president's need to be at the center of things. Look, I'm always going to be grateful for Gorsuch. I'm always going to be grateful for the regulatory cuts, the tax cuts, the policy. And in point of fact, I can make an argument that the president has been tougher in a form of policy against Russia than Barack Obama ever was. That said, I have to admit, I watched the press conference this morning expecting to see a president go at Putin and to be firm like he is in other arenas, and he wasn't. And I sit here sad and baffled, but trusting that there's a reason for it. Thanks for the note. I'm getting a lot of these today. Look, I think that it's absolutely right that the president is quite aware of the fact that the media wants to make him Putin's boy. And that any time the president really digs into Russian trying to meddle in our elections, and Russia's Russia. They've been trying to meddle in our country from the day that we became adversaries. They've been trying to meddle since communism took over. It's expected. Right? And this isn't the first time. It's news only because Hillary lost. Had Hillary not lost, this would never be news. And that has to eat at the president. It eats at me. The unfairness of it eats at me. And unlike Mark, I'm not a fan of the president's personality. Never going to be. Doesn't matter. I don't vote for presidents because of personality. I vote for them on their likelihood of being able to get the job done. Now, to Dwight in Edmonds. Dear Mr. Herman, I got a big laugh out of the press conference today because once again, the media is chasing its tail. They're going to go down this rabbit hole for the next 2 weeks of there's collusion, there's collusion, there's collusion. While a bunch of us are going to sit out here and go, oh, so we're going to go do this until November. If there was collusion, Mr. Herman, it would have come up by now. It would have been leaked unless there's some magical reason for them to hold on to that. What do you think Mueller brings to the table eventually, if he ever brings anything? Love the show. Thanks for listening. And I know I can kind of count on you for independent analysis of the president, Dwight. Dwight, here's what I think. I think that Mueller will bring obstruction of justice charges against President Trump sometime before the midterms. And I think he will do that to drive turnout for the Democrats, who will then believe that if they just take the House and they take the Senate, then they can impeach the president based upon those charges. Are they going to be substantive? I don't think so. I do believe that this would have leaked by now if there was actual collusion, right? And I point to the charges of Manafort. That has nothing to do with the campaign. That said, today in the press conference with Putin, I, too, am left a little bit flat-footed. I got to be honest with you. Yep, I understand the unfairness of the media, and I totally concur. Would not be news had had Trump not won. Had Clinton won, never would have heard a thing about Russia meddling. And if I were Donald Trump, it would drive me nuts. So would the absolutely, clearly, objectively inarguable fact that the DOJ and the FBI soft-pedaled the Hillary investigation. It cannot be argued otherwise. And they've gone full force at Trump. It would drive me nuts because I believe in fairness. And particularly for law enforcement and the media, I believe in that. I got to think that eats at the president. So when he's in a setting like this with Putin, I have to believe that's in the back of his mind. Last up, an email, Cynthia from Portland. Dear Todd, from Portland, Oregon to Seattle, a note. And by the way, I discovered you on podcast and listened for 2 weeks before I figured out you're the guy I also hear fill in for Rush sometimes. From Portland to Seattle, there is signs of hope growing. You call it punching big holes in the wall of stupid. I call it people waking up from their stupor. Just this past weekend in Portland, I walked into a business that had a sign up that said, "Our rates have been raised so we can afford to clean. the excrement off of our doorstep every day. I laughed at first, and then I sort of felt like I wanted to cry. But the honesty of what they put up there is stunning and alarming, but it's absolutely true. And this is one of those little shops that we've been going to for years to fulfill this and that little hardware need. I'd learned that you guys had lost a hardware store in your area, much like this one in Seattle. I'm glad the owner put the sign up. I want other owners to put the same sign up. I know it's a rude sign, and I know it can put a bad taste in your mouth, so to speak, so it doesn't belong in restaurants. But let's be clear. Store owners are having to spend their money to clean up the excrement, not just of the street people, but of the city council who is actually making the situation pile up, if you know what I mean. Yours, a listener from Portland, Cynthia. Cynthia, it's a great note. I'd love to see signs like that on businesses here, right? This is why the rates are being raised, because we have to go out and wash up vomit and human feces from our side from our sidewalks because of the decisions of people like the Bhagwan Shrill Sawant. Todd Emmert Show will continue with a fresh round of Seattle Spirit on AM 770 KTTH on the Greater East Side, 94.5 FM.